expecting anybody else that you know. All right, why don't we get started? Call meeting to order. And is there anybody that doesn't know everybody? I don't think so. Okay, so we'll skip the introductions. And do I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The agenda's approved. This time we have public comments for items not listed on the agenda. We have policy of limiting speakers to no more than 3 minutes. We can't take action on items not listed on the agenda. Public input may be offered on agenda items when they come up for discussion and or action. Is there any public comment? No? Okay. Then do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of October 17th?
So moved.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Any old business? New business. We're going to start first with the fourth quarter inspection, and then afterwards we'll go to the third quarter re-inspection. So I'm going to turn it over to Dave.
Good morning. The inspection of November 12th, probably the main highlights there were some issues with sprinklers and in the cafeteria area, where that's kind of a the back area where the dish machine is, it's kind of a wet area, and some rust up on the ceiling, diffusers. Also in surgery, there were some sprinkler heads that were either had some dust on them, or there were some escutcheon ring issues. And also in surgery, outside of OR number 4, there were some blocked electrical panels, and just with storage in the surgical area. In the clinical lab, there was an electrical room, and that was blocked with boxes of copy paper and a cart, which is an issue in case they needed to get into that room in a hurry. Also, there was some issues identified with phlebotomy cart storage in a former EVS closet. There were some items with dust in that room, and an open panel up to the interstitial space in the ceiling. And so I know the hospital will be looking at that to try to identify better storage for those carts. And we went to the GI lab. That was a day that was very busy in the GI lab, so the area that we were able to look at did not have any issues, but probably want to go back through there and look again when we do the re-inspection with the hospital.
That ought to be noted in the report that plan to re-. It just says no findings identified, so maybe we can amend it to just say that we plan to re-inspect that area next time. Does that, anybody have a problem with that?
Okay. And those were, let's see, in other, you know, in my mind, relatively minor things, maternal fetal medicine, there was some missing laminate on a corridor door, and in medical records, there were some wall damage in the break room that I know the hospital will get after very quickly. Any questions on the inspection of those areas?
I participated in this inspection. I even suited up to go in the OR area. Is that what it was called? The
OR area.
Surgery or OR.
Surgery OR area. And the last time I had been there, I had only seen the ceiling because I was lying on a gurney. So this gave me an opportunity to see the walls and stuff like that. I actually was impressed, isn't the right word, how much storage there is along the sides of the corridors. And I mean, they're legal or whatever, but I presume that's just occurred over time as there's more equipment and things that have to be stored. So I just didn't expect a storage area to be basically the hallways, but as long as it meets code and all that, I think it's all right.
And I think just to follow up on that a little bit, the main corridor I think you're referring to is that one that runs along where the windows are to the position parking lot, and that is not a rated corridor as far as requiring the 8 foot, but it is a little bit of a concern when they start on both sides of the corridor and then also start putting double parking, I call it, with some of the carts in that hallway. It starts to narrow things down a little bit. So I know storage in a hospital is always a challenge, and you know, the OR folks are continuing to look at that.
Any other?
Yeah, I had a couple of comments, having been an ex-patient as well in the hospital. And one of them was, I noticed that in the pre-op education area, lab area, that in order to get an EKG, you have to go through a bathroom to get to the other side. And I'm just wondering if that's kosher. This is the second time I've noticed that, and I pointed it out to somebody at the staff, and they said something about there's no door in between the two areas, so they can do a EKG, that they walk patients through a public bathroom to get there. Do you know anything about that, Dan?
I know the area you're talking about. And, you know, I don't know what to, you know, how to change that other than to take patients all the way around the, you know, the corridor instead of taking the shortcut through there. I don't know.
So, you know, maybe the shortcut's not very conducive to patient observation of, you know, here I am for surgery and you're taking me to a public bathroom to do an EKG.
It's the pre-op. It's not a sterile area, is it?
No, it's not a sterile area. I'm just saying observation as a...
It just looks bad.
Yeah.
So as far as any kind of life safety code issues, I don't see any there from a...
That would not be something we would condone. So it seems that we have a staff practice that we need to talk about the shortcut versus the appropriate
way. Yeah. And I'm just saying it just...
Bring it to their attention.
Especially
since Michelle didn't know about it.
Yeah.
No, Michelle would not be saying take people through a public bathroom to get to a procedure. Right?
Okay. That was one of the other one that I noticed, and it's just cosmetic, is that when you sit down in the lab for them to take your blood, it's a leather chair and it's just all the fabric is cracked and open.
We have a number of chairs that are
They need a new chair in there. And it's just
is
cosmetic. It's just cosmetic. Patients are, you know, that nothing would be reported, but it's just something that needs to make the hospital look better. That was my observation.
And that's a continual process, is replacing all these chairs. Mm-hmm. Chair
mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So you got my feedback.
To be reprioritized.
Other than that, I had a wonderful hospital stay.
Twice.
All right. If there's no other further discussion on the fourth quarter, let's go back to reinspection of third quarter, which has to do with follow-up of items prior to that.
So after we completed the initial inspection on November 12th, we then went and re-inspected areas that had been identified before, and everything was has been completed and verified with the exception of two items. One is on 1 East where there's a damaged door. The laminate was damaged and the door was on order, and I believe Steve told me that, Steve Ballard told me that that door had just come in, so I would expect that that's probably been completed by now. The other area was a patient room on the Women Infant Center where there had been some wall damage in the patient's restroom, and that wall had been repaired, just had not been repainted yet. And again, talking with Steve, I'm figuring that that's probably completed as well. So that good response from the hospital to get all of those outstanding items taken care of.
Okay.
Estes did verify for me that all the items on these group two reports have been completed, with the exception of the door that's been ordered for the MFM on the last, on the last review. And he still has some additional painting to do on the medical record damage break room.
Yeah, that was probably a little project for the painter, just to probably redo a couple of walls in there, so.
So the rest is painted, that would be the first report and the second.
Right.
And those two items on the last.
So we will meet with the hospital in January, and then Andrea probably remembers the date that we have the next inspection scheduled. And we'll do the re-inspection of the items identified from November 12th at that time as well.
Yeah. Can you remind us what that date is?
I will. Which is January the 23rd, 9 a.m.
I had a follow-up question about the status of the elevators. Are all the elevators in working order?
All of the elevators that I went in on that day, which was not all 27, I think, in the hospital, but yeah, I think everything's good, and they look good, too.
Mm-hmm. Really the ones that have been rebuilt.
Yes.
Including fixing the elevator here, which was out for, what, a week or two? Was that a big deal? Anybody know if that was what the problem was with that?
Okay. Only those in a wheelchair.
That's right. All right. Any comments, any further comments on the hospital inspection and re-inspection?
Thank you. Appreciate that you guys take a look at it and then let you fix it.
Yeah, I mean, the hospital responsiveness has been very good. This is the fourth quarter of the year since we started doing the inspections, and all of the follow-up has been very good. So,
well, many of these items are continual. We're continually replacing laminates, people drive, gurneys, cards. So the paints, the walls, it's a pretty continual process. Those little estancia things tend to come loose.
All right, let's move on to the third agenda item under new business. We wanted to get an update and have a discussion about the recently released leapfrog hospital safety grades. And Christine, you might take it away.
I apologize if I have to take a drink. I had some dental work yesterday. Still a little sore.
If you guys, so that you can see the screen, want to come over here, you're welcome to. Okay, as long as you can see.
Mark.
If you want to see the screen, you're welcome to come sit over here.
You can sit here. You can sit. Okay.
Thank you for having me back. I wanted to give you an update on our recent LeapFrog scores and just give a little explanation for those that might not be as familiar with how LeapFrog comes to its ratings. It originally came out in 2012. It's actually made up of 27 different measures. The data is tracked over time and overlaps grading periods. So some people are under the impression that it's a fresh look at a hospital every 6 months, but it's not. Some of the data stays on there for 2 to 3 years. So there is overlap of grading periods. What's interesting that I learned in my deepest dive into understanding the complexities of things like LeapFrog and star ratings is that with LeapFrog, they basically give a hospital a starting rank at a 3.0, and then they add or subtract points based on the overall performance of the 27 measures that are mentioned. Once all hospitals
3.0 equals a through C?
Through, well, the next one is once all hospitals have submitted, they then have a bell curve. So just like when you get graded on a test, they wait till everyone submits their scores, and then they do a bell curve distribution and rank the score. So the hospital will get a numerical score, but they have to wait 2 or 3 months before we get confirmed to what the actual letter score is going to be. And the scores are released twice annually to the public in April and October.
Before you leave that, since it's a bell curve,
Do they have a goal of what percent of hospitals are going to be in each of the grades? Since a normal bell curve, if I remember correctly, has two standard right. deviations being 96% of the thing. Is it the same with...
Don't know the exact.
Okay.
Off the top of my head.
Well, if you look at the number of A's and the number of F's, are they
They're
the
not equal. Then.
They're not right. equal. So it's not really a bell curve, then. It's just
but the delineation between an A and a B and a B and a C and a C and a D, et cetera, is done after the curve is initiated. But it's not a 100% bell curve
right.
like
right.
you're going to weigh you
in the middle. It's, what do they call it? It's graded on a
curve,
but it's not necessarily an equal
curve.
Standard
yes.
deviation kind of thing. Okay, that's exactly. what I wanted to know. Thanks.
Who comes in and measures?
Actually, I'm going to go through that in just a second. It's a measurements from a variety of different places. 2,600 hospitals participate. Some hospitals don't have enough of the measures to fully participate. So you may see on there that they aren't given a letter score, or they have some blanks that says not applicable, or hospital did not respond. Certain hospitals don't participate at all, so critical access, and then you'll see the other hospitals that don't participate.
And can a hospital choose not to participate for any of those, for any reason they want?
Some of this is publicly reportable data, as we're going to see patient satisfaction metrics and different things through CMS that they measure. And so if the hospital chooses not to participate with the survey, their public-related scores are still going to come through.
But what stops a hospital from saying, we're not going to report measure A or measure X, because we know our score is bad and we don't want it included?
There's the measures that all relate to the safety score are mandatory completion. So, and then there's some other measures that are for statistical purposes, like the OBGYN delivery data, things like that don't relate back to the numerical score, but you can submit that data for statistical purposes if you choose.
So the point I'm getting at is a hospital can't choose to not report right. something because it's a bad score.
I wanted to explain, first of all, the score is divided, the numerical score is divided into 50%. And then of that 50% of the pie, different portions of it are consist of that portion. So of the 50% that we're looking at right now, 35.5% is the survey questions. Survey questions talk about ICU staffing and the different things that are written there. I'm going to go through them a little bit more when we get to our hospital. And then patient satisfaction is 14.5%. And it's a rolling 12-month period for patient satisfaction, and it usually has about a year lag in the scores from what shows on the from the data period that you're currently in.
And I'm sorry, go back a second. HCAHPS, those are results of questionnaires sent to patients by us or by CMS?
We use a third-party company. We use Press Ganey.
We use Press Ganey.
So a third party company does the patient satisfaction.
CMS has approved third parties, and then you participate in one of those approved.
So as long as you use one of their approved parties, right. it's accepted by CMS for the HCAHPS scores.
So again, you can't skew your data. It's publicly reported. The other half of the pie is made up of three sections. One is patient safety outcomes and infections. Those together total about 30-something percent of the pie. So your hospital acquired measures include falls leading to trauma, foreign bodies, air embolism. Then there's your five infections that we track, central line infections, MRSA, bladder infections from a catheter, infections after colon surgery, or C. diff, which is a very contagious inflammation of the colon. The other last portion of that 50% of the pie is our seven patient safety measures. This includes pulse pressure injuries, lacerations after surgery, respiratory failure, blood clots, wounds, collapse of the lungs, or they have certain complications that they want to see how the hospital's measuring against, and then they measure a rate against those within those complications that have died from those. So just to go over our past scores of where we've sat, this is the last 2 years. You can see back in fall of 2017, which is 2 years ago, we were C. We did raise to a B for one reporting period, and then we've been at a C for the last three reporting periods. If you look to the far left, the numerical scores you can see are very close to the 2.8, 2.9 margin. They're, what, a hundredth of a measure, a hundredth of a percentage point off of. And again, if you ask me what's the cutoff from a B to a C, it changes each grading period, and they don't necessarily give you, for instance, this time, if you would have had this, it would have given you a B, or all the hospitals that had this got a B to a C range, or whatever the case may be. We have a calculator that we fill out that will tell us what our numerical score is, so we can kind of go back and do some calculations. But they don't have anything that they publicly release or release back to the hospitals that tells you if you only would have done this, you know, maybe you would have improved. So,
do you have your own personal thoughts of what that might have been?
I do. You know, we've talked over the past periods within governance. Patient satisfaction is obviously, it's a year lag, but some of the other data is 2 to 3 year lag. So obviously, you can have the most impact on your scores by really focusing on your patient experience. You know, infections, it's a one and done type of thing. They don't want hospital acquired infections, things like that. So when we go through, I'll go a little bit over what hits a little heavier on your scores. But what we're focusing on is, you know, really, trying to achieve that zero infection rate and to really improve our patient experience as one of the primary things that we're doing to drive good improvement. So of the first 50% of the scores, the survey questions, we received the full complement of points from our fall 2019 survey for our ICU physician staffing, which is 24/7. They want to make sure that we have computerized physician order entry systems that prevent errors, so it's actually a test that we have to take. Takes about 3 hours, and they give us a set of orders and things like that, and then our informatics people actually do it, and they want to see if pharmacy catches certain contraindications or things like that. So we received full points for our testing. Hand hygiene policies, nursing workforce, leadership structure, and cultural measurement are all survey questions that we answer, and we have all the structural pieces in place that they look for, so we got full points in this last survey period. We had an opportunity of the following two categories that we have since corrected, so we expect those will get full points in next period. One is barcoded administration. Even though we have barcoding in the emergency room, there are certain medications that the nurse would scan the order and the patient's ID band, but not all of those emergency medications had barcodes on them, so we since have worked on that and fixed that. And then the risk of aspiration we were doing with high-risk patients, they've since asked us to do it on 100% of the patients coming in, so we've made that change, and all patients are getting screened, and we make sure that the documentation for that exists.
Do you happen to know off the top of your head how you screen for aspiration?
It's with our high-risk population, we answered the question, yes, we screen the high-risk, because we actually do a swallow evaluation for all of our stroke patients and different things.
Swallow evaluation?
It's not feasible to do a swallow evaluation on 100% of the patients, but in the nursing assessments, we have key questions that the nurses will respond to as they're doing the patient's history and the physical assessment. And if any of those triggers no, then it requires the nurse to do a more extensive exam, such as a swallow exam, to make sure that the patient is not at risk.
And a swallow exam is done by a speech therapist?
Yeah, a swallow exam is done with just a sip of water and things, you know, at the bedside by the nurse.
By the nurse, okay.
And a full aspiration screening is done by a physical therapist if the swallow exam is not passed. So you'll see we have two different policies, one that's just a preliminary rough screening for basic water that the nurse can do, but then the therapist will do a more extensive review with applesauce and, you know, different things where they really are looking at the consistency and how the patient moves the food to the back of their throat.
So again, just any patient, for example, admitted with possible aspiration pneumonia would most likely get a swallow.
Correct. They're going to do the screening, correct. As far as patient satisfaction, as I mentioned, the scores lag. So on our fall 2019 score, they were looking at patient satisfaction scores from October of 2017 to September of 2018. And you can see that over the last three reporting periods, we haven't moved the mark too much in our patient satisfaction scores. We show very strong performance and communication about meds the last few periods, and that's since we implemented a program called Ask3 Teach3 before all patients get medications. You know, the nurse will work with them to make sure they understand why they're on it and that they understand the side effects. Discharge information has really improved since we opened our discharge lounge for patients going home. And then the key area where we notice that there is opportunity for improvement is our communication with doctors. So at the last medical executive committee, I worked with our physician partners to develop a task force and a work group with the physicians, and some of them actually volunteered to be the champions on this so that we can figure out how we then take the next leap to getting the communication with the doctors up. Part of the challenge with being a teaching facility is that many times you have multiple physicians coming through, and anytime that they're not all in sync with each other, it also is confusing to the patient. So we're working with our residency teams on this as well. And one recommendation is that we try to have nursing do rounding with the physicians more frequently so that everyone is in the room talking to the patient at the same time.
Staff responsiveness, I presume, is how quickly the call button is answered. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is 81, 82?
They're measured against each other, and they're also measured against national benchmarks. So
for do you have these, a target for that?
For these, we're running, for our overall hospital rating, our target's 74. These are specific measures within the hospital rating that rank the overall hospital. So
so these are the ones that LeapFrog uses?
These are the ones that LeapFrog uses.
Yes, it's a subset.
Yeah, so how do you measure staff responsiveness?
So basically, it's the question.
Yes, the individual's perception.
And
whether
it's a perception. We do chop box performance. So basically what this is stating is we will only count it as a positive response from the hospital if the patient says that we always do it. So 82% are saying that we always respond
in
the timely fashion. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very, patient satisfaction is a very tough metric. Mm-hmm. You don't get credit for improving, you only get credit for those top box scores.
Right. You have to hit the 9 and 10 or the always.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is 9 and 10 always?
9 and 10 correct. And always, yeah.
Hmm.
So these are percents of 9 and 10s and always.
Mm-hmm. I noticed at the rehab hospital where I was staying that this, if you hit your call button, the time was measured when somebody came back and responded and turned off your call button. And if it went beyond a certain time, then lights started to flash mm-hmm. and bells rang. Mm-hmm. So
we are in the process mm-hmm. of establishing new call systems mm-hmm. throughout the facility. It's actually taken us down a number of rooms at a time to do this work, but we mm-hmm. have two or three units completed. Mm-hmm. And when we're done, we will have the capability with that system to run reports off of it for time.
Yeah.
I don't know about the bells and whistles for, you know, time goes too far.
But the new systems do have an escalation process.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and part of it is not only making sure that you can, that people are responding appropriately, mm-hmm. but it's also managing the individual patient perception.
Exactly.
Because time feels so mm-hmm. long when you're waiting or you're in pain mm-hmm. or you need to go to a bathroom.
Sure. Well, and it's, what's good about it, it's measurable.
Right.
Yeah.
The other feature that system has is the ability to link with the SpectraLink wireless phone systems, and we're in the middle of doing a hospital-wide upgrade of our wireless network and the bandwidth to be able to handle the technology of these types of things. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of new handsets and things like that that will all tie together, but you have to take pieces of it and you have to take rooms down to get different pieces of this done.
The upgrade on the VPN system will take until April of next year in order to go through that entirety of that building and bring up the wireless bandwidth.
And the impact you expect that to have on your staff?
The what? The
impact you expect that system to have on your staff?
Oh, I think the staff will be very, very pleased because it would give them a much more consistent bandwidth of their SpectraLink phones. Won't cut in and out or drop. It will better clarity. Everything is on computerized WOWs. So if you get the system overrun, then it can be slow. If you have some time lag when they're trying to document in records. So it will improve the actual work environment for the individuals.
I had a question about communication with doctor or even with nurse. What question do they ask? Did your doctor satisfy your questions or? How is that measured?
Satisfied are you with?
There's three questions within each category, and to be honest with you, Carol, I cannot honestly think of the questions off the top of my head.
Time spent, questions answered, and I'm drawing a blank on the third one that cumes into that category. We do think, because if you remember, we've been in cap build. So each year we're onboarding a number of new residents, and then we'll be at cap build this July at about 120 residents. So there is some thought to, as the numbers have increased, that it does play into the scores and how we're managing things a little bit differently.
The same questions are asked by each of the vendors?
Yes, they have. The questions are absolutely identical.
Determined by it.
And it's determined how they can word them, and all of these are recorded calls. So if, let's say that there was we got notified by Press Guinea that there was an unhappy or a concerning or a praise that they wanted us to hear, we actually can go and listen to the tapes that we give them. Mm-hmm.
So perceptive.
The other 50 section in this 50% has to do with three major things that obviously, you know, they're never events in the hospital, things you never want to happen. This is our data from July 2016 to June 2018, and it's the rate per 1,000 discharges. We occasionally have a fall. This was, I think, one fall within that reporting period. So it did raise our rate above the zero. Zero foreign body retained and zero air embolisms.
Just for falls with trauma, the lower the number, the better.
Right, we want the one to be zero.
So anything more than a zero lowers your grade score. And in this period, we had one fall over that 16-72 year period.
What's an air embolism?
Air embolism would be somehow some air gets into the blood circulation, and your heart doesn't perform well when you suddenly introduce air into it. So it could happen after a cardiac catheterization. It could happen, when a central line, any of the big punctures into your vascular system for procedures could cause air to leak in if it's not properly removed and cared for, those types of things. So we've had zero of those.
Yes.
Exactly. Of the infections, which is 21.1% of the 50% of the pie, we did well over the reporting period. We like observed, expected, you want to see less than one. They do anticipate that in hospitals that are trauma hospitals, big hospitals, teaching hospitals, etc., that you're going to have some infections, so that's why the rate is observed over expected. And then they look at they call it a case mix index of our patient population and the patients coming in to know how sick they are, and they anticipate that you're going to have a certain amount of infection. So you can see for fall 18 and 19, spring, the central line infection rate was a little elevated. It did come down in the fall. MRSA infection was doing okay, and then we did have, I think, 3 cases over the course of a year that raised that particular rate in fall of 2019. Catheter-related urinary infections is below. Infection after colon and C. diff are all well below the 1, so they're all doing well.
Can I ask a question? So the expected rate is determined by, I presume, acuity of patients. Does it take into account, for example, the number of homeless individuals or the number of patients admitted with addiction or anything like that?
No, unfortunately not. And we do have a physician advisor, Dr. Gerges, but one of the key challenges to our emergency room physicians and admitting physicians is to make sure that all of those metrics that goes into the health of that patient is brought forth, to be present in the chart so that that risk index is proper for that patient. For instance, a patient comes in because they're having a heart attack and they need to go to cardiac cath lab. Well, if they're also insulin dependent since childhood and have been on dialysis, and that's not put into the record, then the risk of that patient dying is going to appear that much greater than it would have if the full picture of the patient had been painted. So
I'm just concerned. I mean, I understand that a trauma patient is going to be higher risk, and so that's going to count. But there's no question that this hospital sees a large number, probably more than other hospitals, of homeless and people with addiction issues. Yet that's, I mean, I want to understand whether or not that's taken into consideration. And if it's not, I mean, I think it's incumbent on...
Yeah, your psychosocial does not enter into these clinical measures.
And is that, so I know the American
Hospital...
You have
to be things like diabetes. You know.
Right, because they're not coded necessarily.
So I'll give you an example of how that affects exactly what your point you're trying to make is with the MRSA infections.
Right, well, that's what...
So of the 3 MRSA infections, 1 was trauma, 2 were homeless. If you can prove that the MRSA infection existed prior to them coming in the hospital, then you get that excluded.
So would you have to then do MRSA screening on every patient?
You would have to do MRSA screening, not just on every patient, but also
on
every orifice.
Every
patient, you know, you'd have to do PAM screening everywhere, which is just not feasible.
So I know that the American Hospital Association and the California Hospital Association have criticized some of these measures. Is this one of the areas that they've criticized as being a problem?
Anything that is a present on admission identifier is suspect.
Okay.
Because it really, as you said, for a small facility, you know, their potential of being able to manually manage the data set versus a larger facility is...
Okay, and then one last question on this, and that's is LeapFrog and CMS, are they looking at somehow taking into consideration some of these variables that so far have not been able to be taken into consideration,
actually,
as far as you know?
Actually, there was just a town hall and feedback requested for CMS star ratings within the past 6 or 9 months. So I got to participate through Hospital Association and give our feedback of what we're concerned about or what we feel are measures that don't actually reflect currently what's going on in hospitals. So,
but what about other hospitals? Are they bringing up the same issues?
Yeah, they are. It's similar to this. The other the other thing with the MRSA infections, that's being that we're more of a retirement area as well. We have a lot of hospitals that feed into us, as well as a lot of nursing homes that feed into us. That again goes back to the present on admission MRSA rates that we need to really look at and watch and make sure that we're culturing on admission. So overall, as I said, our goal is to have 0 infections. So I listed for you the things that we've been doing over the past year, including a multidisciplinary task force, meaning that we have physicians, residents, nurses. We also have partnered with CDPH and asked, and they came in over the summer, two epidemiologists came in and went all over the hospital looking at our central lines and our practices, and they said our practice was good. They didn't really have any glaring things, kind of like when you do your facilities assessments. There are some little things here and there that they put us in touch with some best practices and things. We've also partnered with some other sister tenant facilities in Texas. We had one that had no central line infections for over a year. So we actually did a WebEx with them. And from that conversation, we found out that they were actually using a central line dressing product that is clear and has an antibiotic impregnated disc on it. And the disc we were using, according to our staff, was sometimes causing the dressings to pull up, and thereby might have been part of the problem. So we switched to that Tegaderm dressing based on that call in November, and we're going to see how that helps with our maintenance of our central lines and things. And then the last thing that we implemented was a hard stop, meaning it's also very important when calculating the risks for these patients that the doctors are documenting every single day, as well as the nursing staff. Why do they need a catheter? Why do they need a central line? And we worked with Tenet to put some hard stops into the medical records so that it's more defined that the doctors are saying we need it for this reason, we need it for that reason. And then we can run reports off of those reasons and then further drill down where we need to go from there. But sometimes it was, the doctor said it needed to stay in, but there wasn't good data for us to look back and say, well, what is the reason we're needing these? Is it medication? Is it a reasonable request to leave it in?
You want to take them out as soon as possible to not have that
bioburden left.
You want to take it out.
The other thing is it makes it difficult if you don't want to take it out so early that you have to put it back.
Right.
So it's very, mm-hmm. It's a very difficult.
The MRSA test that's given prior to surgery patients, mm-hmm. I thought it was just a mouth swab. Is that?
It is. So to rule out MRSA in our surgical population, they'll screen the patients. But we're talking MRSA might also be any trauma patient that comes in,
And it wouldn't show
up. It's every other patient, mm-hmm. In addition to your surgical population.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't show up on a mouth swab?
It would.
But
and then if it's positive, right?
It's just impractical.
Well, I'm dating myself now, but years ago, they used to identify MRSA issue or risk with nasal swabs. That was, so many people had colonized their noses with MRSA in the community. And so I don't know how that translates to risk when you come into the hospital of getting a MRSA infection in the blood.
MRSA, if you recall, then also used to be put into isolation. And there was all kinds of things, but so many people are colonized now that, it's not treated. It's not, unless there's symptomatic reason to, it's not treated. It's not isolated in the same factor, but it's also up to the hospital to do good hand washing. And if it is present on admission, then it's something that the treating physician will keep in their mind as the patient is going through. So it depends on the patient whether they choose to cover with antibiotics or not, depending on the procedure. Yeah. As far as the safety metrics, this is 17.6% of the 50%, and these are our severe pressure injuries, operative puncture or laceration that was not intended, respiratory failure, blood clots, wound opens up after surgery, collapse of lungs, and death from certain complications, and that's a rate.
What's the rate?
The rate, that's why I put it in as a rate, because if you look at all the other numbers, they're running
zero to, so there was about, the certain complications was about 500 or 600 patients, and there was three, I think, that fell out.
But why would it have a rate of 193 if there were three out of 600?
It's the way they calculate.
Oh, okay. So that number doesn't mean anything other than comparing it to previous.
To other hospitals.
So it's not per 1,000.
It's we had 79 cases out of that fell out. So this might be cardiac arrest after a cardiac cath. So if we took a transfer patient in from a one of the community hospitals and they brought them in for higher level of care here, and we said, okay, this patient's not a candidate for cardiac surgery, we can try a cardiac cath. The success of that might be fairly low. The patient's very critical. They're going to die if we don't do anything. So we take them to cath lab and the patient dies. That counts in that category. So because we are a tertiary care center accepting a lot of these cases from outside, we tend to have a little bit higher rates with complications than other hospitals might have.
And is that at all taken into consideration by CMS or LEAP?
Transfer center is not.
Okay.
Yes and no. Yeah. I agree with you.
Well,
I mean, yes, it would with the risk factors, as long as we're documenting all the risks that are coming in. But no, there's not. There's nothing in the data that says this was a transfer patient. It's up to us to make sure that we capture all of them.
Or family, because we do, you know, we completely honor family guidance. So if the family says they want heroics, if the family say, look, we know that there's a 10% chance that we're going to have a good outcome here, but we want you to try.
No, and I understand, but I'm trying to understand the difference between this hospital and other hospitals. Transfer issue is significant. I mean, that is clearly an issue that Desert Regional has. It accepts transfers from other hospitals that can't provide that level of care. Many other hospitals generally don't.
The other thing that hits, just to further what Michelle is saying, is the family will or the patient will consent to come over here for treatment. If it's oftentimes, if it's not successful, then they say, okay, you've tried, we don't want to have them have further pain, and then they'll put them on comfort care and withdraw measures. So at that point, we've already done procedures. We've already done a central line. They've already been transferred in, but now they're discharged to hospice or they pass in the hospital. And that
right.
Also
the variable, from the thing that's different from other hospitals is
the transfer.
Right, because if a patient comes from JFK, for example, ends up not making it at Desert after exhausting.
It's Desert's death, not JFK's
JFK
death.
Doesn't get attributed to that in their scores, even though they initially care for the patient.
Right.
Does that open the door wrong?
So just a summary of key things. We recognize if you see a thread through a lot of these, they really do relate to our procedural areas, especially our perioperative areas. And we've created many work groups working with administration, the staff, and the physicians. We have new OR leadership that's present over the past year, and Ron is really engaged. The new manager he's hired is absolutely phenomenal. She's amazing. Mimi, if you haven't got a chance to meet her yet, but we're really pleased with that. And the GI lab staff also, manager is really good. And we've also had a new cath lab manager start this week, and she's actually a registered nurse that has worked previously at Kaiser. So we're really working with the teams to dig in and find out administratively what we can do to support, and then the building the staff's knowledge, and then bringing the physicians into process improvements and task force and work groups and things. The residency program has really matured since the last year that I spoke to you. We actually have a 2-hour period with them once a month where we do just quality measures, case reviews, talk to them about the coding of the patient when they present so that they capture full risks. And we do a lot of case reviews and things with them at that. And then also after the monthly residency meetings, we actually meet with the program directors and talk to them individually about their program areas, any opportunities for improvement, specific position or residence issues, those types of things. So that's really taken off and is doing really well. And we look forward to doing that through the next year as well. And many of the residents are actually now calling me to be involved with some of the projects and asking, you know, I need to do my project or I need to do a project. What do you have that might interest me? And it provides extra set of eyes and hands and, you know, brain power into those process improvements. Our physician advisor, Dr. Gerges, started in the last year, and she also is helping with the clinical documentation support. She's been really valuable to me to help review files and make sure that things are going down the right paths for review. The Cerner.
By the way, I think it's important that she actually practiced here as a hospitalist rather than bringing somebody that doesn't know the hospital. So I think that
she had a good reputation in standing with the physicians and had their respect, so you're correct. She starts with a very good case. The Cerner upgrades, Michelle's been helping fight for those and be an advocate for those. And we can't have all of them until we get this network finished, everything, you know, to have the latest technology, the medical records, you have to also have the latest technology with your network and your infrastructure. So it's a work in process. It's, you know, next year is going to be really big, and I think we're slated for the Cerner upgrade the end of next year.
One of the things in the, that'll be first to go with the Cerner upgrade, and Chris kind of referenced, is the longitudinal record that will then pull in clinical data from other data sources, from pharmacy, from other, like Eisenhower reports into the data exchange, and so we'll be able to get information from us, we'll be able to get information from them, and to help the caregivers know what the history is on the individual. And
that's exempt from HIPAA?
Yeah.
Well, IAHP kind of set the...
Yeah, it's Manifest Medics and the state.
They set the...
it's HIPAA.
Piece with this, yes. It's,
well, because when, you know, that you get certain consents and things to have your information released to your primary caregiver.
Good.
And then the network will also link us with our hospitals as well, so that when they come from JFK, we have more longitudinal access amongst our facilities.
This, well, everything is evolving, and it all evolves pretty quickly.
And then we talked about the patient experience and infection probe processes that we're working on, and then nursing leadership rounds. Scott Morey and Dee Fontana are nursing leaders. Are out rounding actually daily on the floors formally, and then they also have the leaders of the departments that are rounding and recording the data on their rounds with the patients and things like that. So we're finding that the hospitals that show really strong patient experience scores also link that back to strong nursing leadership support for their staff and rounding in those units. So we're using that as one of our process improvements as well. That's it.
Before I open it up for the board comments and questions, is there any public comment?
Public comment?
Yeah.
Could I ask a question also at the same time, or how does this work?
You can make a public comment, and whether or not your question will be answered is sort of depends on the question.
All right, okay, the public comment. This is the third of these dog and pony apologist shows I've had to sit through. This hospital, in the period of time, they went from having an A grade to being, what, the third straight C grade. The hospital made a net profit of more than $235 million. It shows that it is unwilling to devote the necessary resources to improve the hospital's clinical standing past a certain point. It is always blamed on the patients. the patients don't fill in the survey properly. Transfer patients bring in infectious diseases. Tenet has other hospitals with the same problems. Tenet has other hospitals with the same problems that get A's, that are bigger than this one, that are smaller than this one. This is getting to be like, you know, really the same thing over and over again. And there's never any intelligent questions that come to this to Tenet hospitals about like why it doesn't change. It's just that, oh yeah, I recognize you have problems. Everybody has problems. They spend some money to try and improve them. Tenet doesn't. And it's not as if they don't have the money to improve them. The specific question I have is on the, in the survey, it says track and reduce risk to patients under safety problems. And that's listed as below average. And I didn't see that addressed at all in the presentation. That's my comment, that's my question.
Okay, thanks. Is that a question that you can answer about that question? I mean, I don't know anything about that question. I'll tell you what.
All the references on the page, safety problems, and we addressed dangerous bed sores. That wasn't good.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Why don't we do this? Why don't we, I'll ask Christine to look into that and to provide an answer about what that question's about. And that was your question, right?
Yeah, no, we will not be doing that. I'm not going to do this.
Oh, okay, I just thought it was a question, understanding the question.
Well, the reason I asked is because I saw the other three performance problems listed, but not this one.
Okay. All right, thanks. Comments, questions?
I have none.
Karen?
It's list questions.
What?
It is listed.
Well, that's why.
I know we do not make $200 million a year, which I couldn't do enough.
Okay, I wanted to make a couple points. First of all, would it be okay, on pages 1 through 6, which are basically just an explanation of the scoring and leapfrog, would it be okay if those pages don't have any data, could be entered into our minutes just for information about how leapfrog works? Is that okay?
What were the pages again?
1 through 6.
1 through 6.
Yeah. Okay, great. I think that's good. The other thing is I do think that, although I don't think it's an apology, I think the reality is there are some differences between this hospital and other hospitals. The reason I'm concerned about it is not only because I'm a patient at this hospital, my family's a patient at this hospital, but the Desert Healthcare District is conflated with Desert Regional Hospital, and so the public does come to us with questions and concerns about what these scores mean. So I think there are two areas that the story could be told better. Whether or not you think it's worth telling the story from a PR point of view, I leave that to you. But I do think that the part about the patient population, the fact that you are taking care of more homeless patients, more people with addiction problems, and that affects MRSA, which is a very strong indicator, I think that could be told. And then the fact that you have transfers from other hospitals that are seeking for patients a higher level of care. And I think it explains why some hospitals like Loma Linda and Cedars, which have very good reputations, also have scores that are B's and C's and things like that. So that, you know,
Mayo is a C.
What?
Mayo is a C.
Right. And yeah. So the community and its, you know, the reality compares us to Eisenhower, yet you're comparing apples to oranges. And I think that where it's possible to tell that story and feel like it's not going to be come across as apologist, but as reality, then I would hope that you could do it. And it's your responsibility, not ours, to do that, because I think if we try to do it, it does come across as Ezra says, is our trying to apologize for you. I think you can tell the story better. Whether or not you choose to do it is up to you.
Right. And I do like that idea, and I think that is certainly our plan. Chris and I will sit down with, you know, NBC is the one who did this story recently, and you all just sat through, 40 minutes, and we had less than an hour you know, we get the call, we're doing a story on Leapfrog, can you give a comment? And there's no way in the time frame that a report gives you for a deadline that you can give this kind of complexity. So what we want to do is sit down with the staff and walk them through it, not in the hopes of actually amending the story or doing another story, but for education, so that when the next Leapfrog comes out,
perspective,
they understand everything that goes into the grading of it and telling that story a little bit more balanced. That,
think about,
that is our hope.
Think about if you're a member of the public and you're concerned about, should I go to Desert Regional? And somebody explains to you, well, the reason Desert Regional doesn't score as well is because they take care of people transferred from other hospitals, and the population they see, which has a lot of homeless and a lot of people with addiction that are at higher risk for MRSA, is different, yet you as a patient are not at higher risk. That's the message.
Right.
By going to Desert Regional than going to a hospital that doesn't take care of as many homeless and addiction patients. And I think if you can get that message out, I think that's going to help. Obviously, the whole dog and pony, and I'm using that respectfully because I've heard this is now the fifth time I've heard this, mm-hmm. and I learn things every time that I didn't understand before. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to get the press or for that matter the public to understand all the details.
Not only that, especially when you go to restaurants and you know the rating system on a restaurant. You always have a second glance if something's anything but an A.
Right, yes.
So that the public's comparison is like our restaurant story. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you what the score JFK was?
An A, as was High Desert an A.
I saw the High Desert open A's.
Yeah, they're both A's.
But again, one of the reasons is that when they get a sick patient, they transfer it here.
And you know what? A really sick patient.
Yeah. And so does Isaac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But how do you, I struggle with it.
It's a challenging message to get
because
into
really,
a six-second soundbite.
But really at the end of the day, it's all about going through every single one of these cases that fell out and trying to figure out what it is you can do better.
I'm concerned about the reputation of the hospital, and not just from the Desert Healthcare District point of view. As a patient, mm-hmm. Or as a friend who posts on Facebook, I think I want to go to Eisenhower because their score is better. I will be safer there. Somehow you have to address that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And again, it may be a losing proposition. And I understand that the more you highlight it, the more attention you're going to get.
So I
understand the dilemma you face. I'm just sharing a little bit of my frustration.
No, I
appreciate it.
But ultimately, regardless of who you are and regardless of your patient population, the expectation is to figure out a way to bring it down to
perfect. Mm-hmm. Increase your patient satisfaction.
Yes. I think I told you that one, and I explained at the board that the barcoding issue during the test period was a product shortage, that you couldn't get the regular product that had the barcode. So we had to go to an alternate product, but that didn't have the barcode, so therefore we weren't 100% of the bar. That grade alone, that one little finding alone, would have been the difference between a C and an A.
Okay, I mean, that's...
A C and a B.
That's, again,
but
that's...
But a C and a B, it was that, you know, that tight, mm-hmm. that if that manufacturer had not run out of that particular bag of...
Was that part of the Puerto Rico hurricane fallout? Yeah.
Yeah, part of the hurricane fallout.
So what she's referring to is the temporary shipment we got from a different manufacturer of saline bags. The barcoding wasn't in our system.
Right.
And it wasn't recognized right away, so...
So we had some cases
they couldn't scan the bags, and it was just saline bags, but...
Again, think community patient wanting to know that if they come here, it's a safe hospital. Mm-hmm. I know that. You know that. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure the public knows that.
I mean, maybe we need to reverse the numbers. Do you know 98% of the patients admitted don't have MRSA?
Well,
I don't know.
Again,
99%.
They're going to compare it
Less than a 1%.
You need to explain why this hospital is different from that hospital. Why is this hospital different from that hospital? The eternal question. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Okay, that's my opinion. Any other comments before we adjourn? Next meeting is?
January 23rd.
And is that after the, no, no, no,
I'm
the,
sorry,
the hospital inspection is January 23rd.
Right, we don't have a date scheduled for the
so
next.
So it would be, and we're meeting quarterly, so it might be in February or it might be in March, depending on when the next inspection report is finished, correct?
Correct.
So, and I presume you'll get that on, you'll decide when that's going to be soon so we can have it on the calendar.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you all, Christine, very, very good presentation.
Yes,
again, I've heard it five times now, and every time I learn something, I don't want to forget it. Just being adjourned.